Is most of your stuff still hand? Yes. It's still hand drawn.
Yes.
So pencils and inks is all done on the board.
On the board, yeah. No,
and then it's scanned to be sent to to the publisher, basically.
Yeah. I keep toying with the idea of trying to get more savvy with the.
You must use Photoshop for basic stuff.
For the
some lines
dreadful.
And okay, yeah, like no, basic cleanup and
yeah, but I mean I have done.
Yes.
But I'll be honest with you, I like imperfections and I like mess.
So you mean some of the digital stuff is too pristine? Is that your concern?
At least
in terms of yourself, your own work, yourself.
It's from my point of view, yes. It's like, well, you know, what I create is what I want people to see.
Yes.
And I have no desire to kind of tidy things up and make things so precise that
so it's like chaos almost.
Yeah.
Because it gives it that life of its own because it is chaotic and it isn't 100% perfect. There are imperfections which shows that it was created by a human hand.
I think
basically.
It's not so much chaos as organic.
Okay.
Everything about the way I work is sort of in a way is trying to reconnect me with the real world, with nature.
Oh,
that's why subject matter wise you find that.
And you like the 3D covers because there's a tactile nature to them because they're not just 2D images. There's 3D elements which give them like a tactile sense.
Yeah, I like the fact that I end the day covered in paint and glue.
Or if somebody says, "Come look at your Miracle Man cover," you go, "Here, this is it." And you've got doors that open.
Yeah, exactly.
And this one's got like a 3D balloon, and
exactly.
People can actually touch it.
Yeah, I like that aspect of it.
Okay.
I really do, and I think that's the moment where I actually feel happiest and most comfortable as an artist.
Getting your hands dirty, literally, in the material.
Yes.
Okay. But I mean, I'm going to jump around a little bit here. You mentioned, obviously, you said that you came from kind of a sculptural, kind of like an animation background. I want to kind of jump back a bit. So you did go to art college, didn't you?
Yeah. I did a foundation art course, and then I did a 3-year multidiscipline design course.
And that was at?
That was in Staffordshire.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I liked that course so much, which kind of fits with what I've just been telling you, is you did a bit of absolutely everything. So on that course, I spent time doing fashion design.
Wow.
I did photography. I did industrial ceramics.
Yes.
I did glass blowing.
Amazing.
Everything,
you know, yes.
It was
illustration, yes.
Graphics,
yes.
Filmmaking, animation. All of those things were part of the mix.
Yes.
My mistake was that I specialized in graphic design and illustration.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the illustration bit of it was fairly minimal,
yes.
So effectively became me spending a couple of years
doing logos and
letterheads and
yes.
all that kind of stuff. Whereas what I should have done is stuck with the AV department and kept going with the animation and other stuff because there, of course, the thing is what I realise now, which I didn't realise at the time, is I thought, well, what I do is illustration,
yes,
and it's not. What I do is tell stories,
yes.
And I think if that's the, you know, that's the one bit of advice I could run back and tell
and
young
tell younger
me,
self, yes.
That would be the thing. It's like,
yes.
Forget about what you know, the doodling bit.
Yes.
Think about how you communicate with an audience.
Yes.
And that would have stuck me in the right place where I would have had the opportunity to grow.
So, yes. I mean, do you see parallels with somebody like, you know, someone like McKean who does, I mean, he's a kind of a, I guess you'd call him like a polymath in that he's, you know, he directs film and he does illustration, he does, and that there is a bit of an overlap there because obviously you're, you know, I'm talking to you now and you've been building covers and sculpting stuff. Do you see a parallel there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think my problem is that I didn't have Dave's confidence. Well, I don't have his ability either. I'll be brutally frank. I wish I had, you know, 10% of what Dave's got. But, you know, I have my own distinctive voice. I have my ways of doing things.
Definitely.
But I certainly understand his desire to experiment and to try different things and to work in different media as well and to sort of utilise the potential to kind of communicate in different ways.
Yes.
You know, I'm coming to it late in the game, but I'm actually back in that territory myself now.
Yes.
So that's the thing. So I'm working in different ways. I'm doing multimedia kind of mixed media work in terms of paintings and stuff. I'm sort of toying with bits and pieces in terms of filmmaking. Mm. I'm writing songs.
Yes,
I'm kind of doing everything.
A bit of everything, yes.
I'm doing a bit of everything now. Because the other thing is the world has changed.
Yes.
And suddenly, actually throwing all of these different things together to create art is no longer
seen as
something you can't do.
No.
There's no need to sit in a box.
No, you can do... I mean, I guess you enjoy the variety as well. It gives you a chance to express yourself in different ways rather than just being, you know, here's Mark Buckingham, he's a comic artist. You know, here's Mark Buckingham, he's a painter, he's a sculptor, he's a...
Yeah, you know, I mean, and that was the other reason why also I was determined that I would start to focus more on writing as well, because I'd reached a point where I love collaboration, I love working with other people, but I also had so many stories of my own that I wanted to tell.
Was it a natural progression for you to say, you know, the next step was to write your own stuff?
Well, it's where I want to be next.
Yes.
But the thing is, I didn't want to do it without proving that I had some ability.
Yes.
I didn't want to just be, oh, it's the artist who's written something for himself to draw because he just wants to draw robots. I didn't want it to be a vanity project.
I wanted
to prove to people that I had stories to tell, and B, I could actually work as solely as a writer.
Yes.
So that's why over the last few years, I mean, I started out with little bits and pieces, short stories for Vertigo annuals and things like that. I wrote the prose story for Bill to illustrate in Fables 100.
Yes.
And a few other sort of little bits and pieces have been cropping up. And then when Bill and Shelley decided they were going to have this new companion series to Fables with Ferris.
Yes.
I immediately went to them and said, okay, I have an idea for an
I'd like to write.
I'd like to write.
Yes.
And that's where the Tlamaford Llama came from.
Okay.
In the end, because of, you know, all the schedules and with work and stuff, it ended up being the final arc of the series.
Yes.
Because it just took a while to kind of get to it. But it definitely gave me the confidence. I wanted to just be a writer. I wanted to actually provide a script for another artist to draw, which was difficult because I absolutely jam-packed the story with all my favourite things from the Fables universe.
Yes.
But then I thought, well, that's fine because I'll be writing out of love and affection for all those characters.
Exactly.
And also, you know, I deliberately picked Russ Braun to illustrate it because I knew of everybody else that I could think of.
He could do it.
He would do it.
Yes.
And it would be what I would want, but better.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
So that's why that worked out so well. So that gave me the confidence with that sort of under my belt and with a few other short stories and bits and pieces that I've been writing since then.
Yes.
I definitely feel that now I can take that drawer full of projects that I've been...
and actually turn them into...
Yeah, ignoring for most of the last 5-10 years.
Yes.
And actually say, okay, I'll do this one next, and this is how I'm going to handle it, and this will be the structure of it.
Yes.
So that's given me the confidence I need.
I was wondering, how tight are your pencils, or does it vary on who's inking you? I mean, are they...
Ridiculously tight.
Okay.
Even if I'm pencilling for myself, I do have a tendency to make sure everything is pretty...
Is it control? Make sure everything's on the page before somebody, either you or Steve or somebody else, inks your stuff. You want to make sure it's all there, basically.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be rough edges. Some pages may be slightly more rushed than others, but on the whole, I don't let anything go where there's room for doubt.
Yes.
You know, I'm not one of those pencillers who draws three lines.
You've obviously seen Mignola's Hellboy pencils, and they're... They're amazing, but they're incredibly loose. So they look like Hellboy. It kind of looks like a sort of like five lines on the top of a branch or something. But then you look at the finished work and it's staggering. But he likes really loose.
But I've studied his pages enough that if he threw some of those at me, I'd know exactly what was required.
I mean, there's enough pointers, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's more precise than people kind of realise.
Yes. I mean, I find them amazing. They're fascinating to look at.
But yes, I like there to be precision and a definite grounding to everything I draw. Especially because over the years I've pared things down quite considerably, so I don't tend to put a line down that doesn't have a purpose.
No.
Maybe that's a bit of a Alex Toth influence.
Yes.
It's also a bit of the Kirby thing as well.
Yes.
But, you know, there's definitely a...
Everything's there for a reason.
It has a point, yeah.
Yes.
There's no superfluous hatching and fiddling about. And I think that helps in terms of getting a finished result.
Yes,
of course. I'm just going to shut the window because I know it's getting a bit chilly.
Okay, fine.
Sorry for doing that in the middle.
Oh, no, no, that's all right. I get someone to edit these so we can...
Okay.
I was going to ask you about influences. I mean, obviously Kirby is a massive influence. And I mean, who else were influences inside and outside of comics? I mean, you've mentioned some artists, but I mean, who... Oh, and are there people who stayed with you for years... I mean, just a brief list. I know it's sometimes tough for people to boil down. I know influences alter as your career progresses, but I mean...
I'm always seeing new things and picking up on stuff, and it might not necessarily be comics. It might be, I pick up a lot.
I mean, are there people that stay with you? Are there, apart from, obviously, Kirby, I assume there are artists. Oh, yes. Not just comic. I mean, are there sculptors? Are there fine artists? Are there people that kind of always with you that you've always admired that still, you know, inform your work, whether consciously or unconsciously?
Definitely. John J. Muth's one of them.
Yes.
Bill Sienkiewicz is another.
Yes.
Darwin Cook's been a favourite of mine for a while now. Mignola has been a huge influence on me. Toth.
Yes.
Kirby, as we already established. Will Eisner.
Yes.
A lot of kind of classics, I guess, but also a lot of experimental guys. I mean, Dave McKean as well as being a peer, was a strong influence on me.
Something like, what about, I guess Pratt's a bit more...
Oh, no, I love Pratt's work. Yes. Sergei Toppi, you wouldn't necessarily see his work in what I do, but I learn a lot from him as well. There are certain artists that kind of... Alan Davis, actually, has been a very strong influence on me. You probably notice it more in my earlier work.
Is it the clean lines, basically?
Yeah, well, also, the thing I loved about Alan's work is that it's quite traditional... But he has this organic flair.
Yes.
Everything bounces around and works. No matter what he draws.
Yes. There's a movement, isn't there?
But it's grounded. It all belongs together.
Yes.
There's this sort of lovely balance between cartoony and realism.
Yes.
That allows him to be able to stretch that style to encompass
any
subject, any world.
Yes.
And I've always admired that.
Yes.
I'm sure if I put my mind to it, I could run off another.
I mean, are there any exhibitions that you've been to recently in a wider perspective that you thought, wow, it's like, you know, you've always admired their stuff?
A Mucha exhibition that I went to see in Madrid a couple of years back, which absolutely blew my mind.
Yes,
I adored his stuff. I'm just trying to think what I've seen more recently that kind of comes immediately to mind. Of course, the problem is I spend too much time locked away.
Oh, I know. You don't get much chance to actually get out. And I went to the Singer Sargent thing. That was pretty... I don't know if you got to see that, the national...
Unfortunately, that was
spectacular, actually. And they had some amazing charcoal drawings he'd done. I'd never seen before, as well as his dramatic, epic paintings. And I was thinking, wow, this is another side to him as an artist.
I pick up a lot from sort of my travels and sort of exploring different places as well. So, for example, you know, going to see various bits of Gaudi work in Barcelona was very intriguing and inspiring to me as well. And I kind of pick up things everywhere, really. And I pick up a lot from sort of, you know, design and from album covers and things like that. I'm always sort of picking up bits and pieces from things I see other people doing.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a fluid part of who I am and what I do.
I mean, for example, the Miracle Man, say, one of the painted covers, I mean, would you do, like, a pencil sketch for that to work out composition, and then would you go and paint it? Would it be, like, a two-stage process? Would you do a...
I have...
Shoot photo reference? I mean, does it vary?
It varies. I mean, the reality is that I have, over time, learnt to minimise my preparatory work as much as possible. Because what I like, again, it's part of that desire to just express and to have freedom and to not be frightened of imperfection, is to just sort of work out the bones of the storytelling.
Yes.
That's the primary thing for me. It's like the flow across the page.
Yes.
Where all the dialogue is going to go so that I make sure that it, for the reader experience, it's the easiest and simplest thing it can be.
Yes.
And then I just throw myself at the page.
Okay.
And I just get on with it.
Yes.
And I have this very strange working method, which is I grab the page, I put a CD on.
Yes.
Very old-fashioned, I know. Okay. I put an album on. Maybe iTunes or Spotify.
Yes.
And I work solidly for that 60, 70 minutes, whatever the length of the room.
Interesting.
On that one page.
Yes.
And I put as much down on paper as I possibly can.
Yes.
And then when the music stops,
you finish.
Seriously? And I put the page aside and I grab another page and I do the same thing.
That's amazing. And so it's quite regimented. You find it helps you to work because you've got the length of the album basically to work on.
Yeah, and if it's a familiar album, I know I'm getting close to the end because I recognise
the last few tunes.
And it's like, okay, I really need to focus now. But the problem is, I do tend to drift. I can get distracted very easily. Mm. And also the other problem I suffered for a long time was that kind of artist block thing where you're working on a panel and it's not quite right, and instead of stepping away
you get frustrated and try and fix it, and it gets worse and worse, you get more and more dragged into the mire.
I've had phases where I've been unhappy with work and I find myself doing two or three versions of pages and the problem is that each one loses rather than gains something. And so after a while I just realised actually what I need to do is just
throw myself
at the page, really work in a focused way, and then completely divorce myself from it. And what tends to happen is that if I'm really enjoying the page, I'm then frustrated and I'm thinking about it and I can't wait to get back.
No.
And if I'm having a bad time with that page, I get to put it to one side, think about it, and when I come back to it, I've troubleshooted it, I've solved the problem, and it's been really helpful for me as a working process, and that's what's allowed me to have insane periods of work like last year where I was doing two monthly books and writing a third.
That is amazing.
So I mean, being able to kind of have a routine that allows me to focus and do a book in a week or 8 days, whatever, I have a working method that allows me to kind of just jump around the issue. The other thing that I love about that method is I start work on a new comic.
Yes.
And by the end of the first day,
yes,
I've maybe got a third of the issue already taking shape.
Wow. Yes.
So, you know, working in that method, if you get sort of, you know, 3 or 4 days into an issue and pretty much the whole thing exists in front of you in some form, you really feel like you have an understanding of the flow and the structure of the thing.
Yes.
And it allows you to kind of make little tweaks and adjustments to it, so the whole thing just flows seamlessly.
I mean, in terms of your working schedule, for example, I mean, when I interviewed Chaykin, he said that he basically worked from like 9 until 6, and then he downs tools and he has dinner with his wife, and so it's like a job, like it's like going. I mean, do you work until something is done? So, for example, if you've got a particularly hairy schedule, you know, would you work till like 2 or 3 in the morning until you're at the stage where you want to be for that day? Or do you set yourself time parameters and say, I don't really want to be working on this past, say, 8 o'clock this evening?
I wish I could be that focused. No, my problem is that I kind of enjoy my work a bit too much, and I am a workaholic, and I will, if I'm not stopped, just keep going forever.
Oh, okay.
But simultaneously, if I'm not focused and I'm not with it, I can disappear for a couple of days. And sort
you mean like drop into a hole almost? And well, just sit in the studio for like 3 or 4 days and just don't come out and then just...
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing with me is that, I mean, I'm trying to be more regimented now.
Yes.
And I'm certainly, you know, now that I'm not actually doing as many projects at once, I am trying to sort of stick as much as I can within sort of a standard working day. Basically, my wife goes off to work, you know, leaves about 9.
Yes.
I'll maybe lose an hour to, you know, emails and,
just catching up with stuff. Yes,
and
exactly,
listening to the news and sort of getting connected to the world again.
Yes.
And then I'll work pretty much solidly through till she gets back,
so six
around sort of 6:30, 7 o'clock.
Wow!
But I mean, But I'm also flexible enough that if I need to go out and do other stuff, I'm quite happy to kind of come back to stuff and do an hour or two in the evening if it's appropriate.
Yes.
And if I am up against it, I will work till 3-4 in the morning without sort of questioning it. But the problem is, I'm next year I'll be 50. I'm reaching that point now where
you can't do it that long.
It's getting harder. Yeah, I can't. Yes. I can't really sort of kill myself in the way that I did when I started out. I mean, when I was working on Hellblazer, my first sort of professional work for the States, I was also still at college.
Yes.
I was still doing my final year of my degree.
Yes.
So I would spend the mornings at the university. I would run away at lunchtime, have a bite to eat at home, and then spend the rest of the day through till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
Working on the inks of the Richard Disraeler pages.
Yes.
And the problem is that his stuff was so heavy and so detailed.
Yes, it took forever.
You took a full day's work to get a page of that done.
I remember the very details.
So I basically lived my sort of final 4 months at university on 4 hours sleep every night.
Christ.
That was as much as I ever got. And I did it, and I survived, but... And the problem is that it set a bad precedent for me. So it meant that for a lot of my early years...
You were working to that pattern.
I worked to that pattern. Mm. So most of my work got done in the evening and at night time.
Jesus.
I'm glad that I don't do that anymore.
No.
The other thing is, as you get older, I like to work in daylight now.
Yes.
Find that if I work late at night, I have to go looking for my reading glasses.
God,
and,
it's
tougher.
Yes,
of
course.
But, I've been fortunate.
Do you miss... You used to share a studio with Kev, didn't you?
I did share a studio with Kev Sutherland for 4 years.
I mean, do you miss the interaction of working with another artist in your workspace?
I don't now. I mean, certainly that period for me was a very happy one.
Mm.
And I loved the fact that I had company.
I had
Kev there. We also had Lucy and... Becky, who were our kind of a studio assistants, at various points during the time we had to shoot there. And I loved the fact that we had a team. We were an office, and we had multiple projects on between.
And you could bounce between each other for stuff.
We bounced ideas off each other. There was that element of competition.
Yes, yes.
You know, if I got into the studio at 7:30, I loved that thing of saying to Kev, I've nearly finished a page
yes.
at the point where he walks in the door.
Yes.
You know, I liked all of that playful kind of stuff. Also, I liked the fact, again, going back to that kind of polymath thing that we were discussing before, that Kev was involved in other worlds. So he had the stand-up comedy and the sitcoms and all the other kind of stuff that he was doing.
Yes.
And he was also doing more in the way of sort of design work for like T-shirts and stuff like that. So I liked the fact that occasionally it meant that I kind of played in those worlds as well. So all of that was a huge delight to me. But we just reached a point where the work was shifting and it just didn't make sense for us to keep that.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, things
anymore.
Change, you know.
And for a while I did miss it, but I must admit I tend these days to be grateful for the fact that I like to just disappear into my little bubble when I work.
Yes.
That's the other thing with the music is the timing and everything else. I have a very clear idea of how I like to work. And if there's other people in the house, I always get very easily distracted.
Yes. Okay. I was going to ask, because I'm trying to, I guess, just kind of people starting out, I mean, what's the one thing that people should remember as an artist in terms of advice? If you had to pick one thing, I know it's quite tricky, but just one little bit of advice.
Well, the advice I would give to an artist, that's a good question. Actually, it's a tough one.
I know it's tricky because there's a lot of things.
One thing I would say to anyone that they have to make very clear to everyone they love around them is being a comic book artist is not a job, it's a lifestyle choice.
Yes.
And that's something that, I've been aware of for a very long time now. Is that basically, you work ridiculous hours and it completely obsesses you and takes over your mind. So you kind of have to understand that you know, weekends and holidays become...
just another day.
Yeah, well, basically. Yeah, just another day, or can very easily just disappear. Because you know, if a deadline is coming around...
it has to be met.
It has to be met.
Yes.
So it is tough from that point of view. I mean, there's also lots to, you know, I would encourage people to think a lot about how they work in terms of posture, decent chair, try and work upright, try and move around.
Yes, yes.
I mean, it sounds silly, but those things can actually make the difference to surviving and having good health in this career.
I know that Frank Quay's got terrible sciatica
with
his hands because of, you know, because he's worked for a long time now and he's had a terrible time of it.
But again, you know, things you learn over time. I mean, when I started out and I was inking, I was so tense when I inked that I gripped the brush in a way that I'd finish work at the end of the day and I'd literally have grooves in my fingers.
Jesus, because it was so tight, you were holding it so tightly.
And that's something that, you know, I learned over time to be much freer in terms of the way I work and the way
And taking breaks, materials. I guess, when you can... to kind of walk away, just to kind of, as you say, relax yourself and get yourself in a better state physically.
Well, I mean, I do drink far too much tea.
Yes.
But I like the fact that, you know, getting up every hour and a half and having a wander around and making a cup of tea, going and doing a couple of other things around the house and then coming back to the board also allows you to kind of keep your perspective on your work as well. If you just... you know, if you, and that's the other reason with the kind of the musical chairs thing, the way I work, is that also the music ending gives me a break point.
Yes.
And it gives me a moment where I think, okay, something's changed and I need to get up and move around now.
Yes.
And it helps. It helps immensely.
Yes.
And I think... the other thing, I mean, I'd also just say focus on the storytelling.
Yeah.
I mean, so many people get obsessed about the art, about, or, you know, I need to find my style.
Yes.
About getting over finicky and fussy about the technique.
Yes.
And actually, that really isn't what it's about.
No.
The best comics come with a kind of an abandon, a freedom of expression and energy.
Yes.
And that's what you want to capture. So to look for ways that actually allow you to be expressive. I mean, that's one of the things with the Kirby thing. I mean, my love of Kirby, funny enough, was reborn through the Kirby Collector magazine.
Oh, really?
Because what it was is I did a signing in Bath.
Yes.
With Mike Collins, and I was sat there sort of sketching away, and I looked at the shelf, and there was this issue of the Kirby Collector, and it was one that had a Kirby cover of this sort of Cyclops monster and these little soldiers that had been inked by Mignola.
Oh, really?
And I saw that cover, and it was like, it was like this magical light bulb moment.
Yes.
I saw that and thought, that's the style I
want.
Mignola and Kirby
together.
Combined.
Yes, and that was the...
And so I picked this thing up, and that issue was stuffed full of Jack Kirby's New World, New Gods pages from the story, The Pact.
Yes.
And I went through that, and the dynamism and the energy of raw pencil.
Yes.
Absolutely blew me. I just thought, this is what I've been missing, because I was still doing everything with technical pencils and everything was very soft and very precise.
Yes.
And I just thought, no, forget that. So I immediately went to W.H. Smith's and brought a pack of their back-to-school pencils with the razor
amazing,
the
yes.
I just thought, okay, back to basics, back to the raw kind of like...
No, okay.
And enjoying the fact that I let the pencils get blunt.
Yes.
So everything became much more energetic and bold.
Yes.
And that was kind of what allowed me then to end up in the point that I'm in now, which is I got the freedom and the energy in, and then I finessed it.
Yes.
And that was what I... And that's the way I work now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess it's also important for people to look at kind of work outside of comics, you know, everything from obviously art to sculpture to kind of incorporate as much as you can.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
You're not stuck in sort of like a rut and you're not just influenced by one kind of work or
which
one kind of art, if you like.
For example, with the Miracle Man covers, you know, for one will look like a Turner painting, the next one will look like something by René Magritte.
I mean, that kind of reminds me of the Sergeant painting of the children, you know, in the garden, the one in the Cotswolds, when you've got the children with the balloons and the lamps.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no. Anything like that is, you know, you have to keep an open mind. You have to,
yes,
really sort of allow yourself to just absorb things, yes, from around you constantly. But yeah, I mean, I love. Don't get me wrong.
I'm not knocking them at all.
Comics,
I mean, you know,
and a lot of my primary influences are other comic book creators.
Yes.
But there's a variety and an eclecticism to the,
yes,
the mix of them,
yes,
that kind of allows me to then create something myself,
yes,
which is quite unique. And yet it's channeling.
So you're able to kind of apply other people's work in an indirect, subconscious way. And, you know, you mentioned the Kirby thing, for example. So if you see something that you like, you're thinking, you know, how can I apply that to my work in a direct way? When obviously you're not pastiching these people, but you're using them as an inspiration to say, you know, X did this. I'd love to be able to work out how I can capture that same enthusiasm, that same passion, that same application of the tools.
Exactly.
Basically,
that's basically how I work. And certainly, I mean, there are times when you know, you'll see that I kind of wobble a little bit too close to a particular artist's,
yes,
approach, because,
yes,
I'm so into the zone of what they do that,
yes,
I kind of can't help but kind of,
yes,
kind of explore that area. But what I try to do on the whole is maintain this sort of happy medium where there are, you know, a dozen different things in the mix.
So it's kind of greater than the sum of its parts, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not just,
yeah,
your riff.
I mean,
on
and
particular.
That certainly is the case with where I'm heading now with the Miracle Man stuff, because it's,
yes,
it's line work, it's black, you know, it's black and white art,
yes,
to be digitally coloured.
Yes.
But, you know, the methods that I'm using to create it are as much John J. Muth,
yes,
as they are Kirby, or there's Sienkiewicz and other.
Uh-uh.
There's all of these other things going on in the mix that makes it a very unique and,
yes,
different way of,
exactly,
working.
Exactly. Yes.
And that's clearly where I kind of want to be. Mm. But I also want I've tried to create at this point a kind of core style for this book that will give me sufficient room to manoeuvre,
yes,
that if I want to get extremely experimental, I'll head in that direction and,
yes,
it will still balance,
yes,
and work with the,
yes,
whole. And at the same time, if I want to get a little bit more precise, or if I want to go for more of a graphic design approach,
yes,
or whatever, there's room for manoeuvre.
Yes. I mean, I can see that cover. Obviously, it's influenced by, you know, something like pop art. I can see it. It's very,
yeah,
bold. The colours are very dynamic and very vivid.
Well, yeah, I mean, I funny enough, I think what unifies the Golden Age covers for Miracle Man is that I very consciously, with the palette, decided that, okay, my primary colours are going to be the blue, yellow and red of his costume.
Yes.
And gold.
Yes.
It's basically those,
yes,
four colours.
Yes. Yes.
And it, but the style and the structure and all of those things change from cover,
yes,
to cover. So the idea is that you can look at the set as a whole.
Yes.
And they're unified and they work, and yet each one is,
yes,
so distinct.
I mean, it's like that's
different.
Slightly more conceptual. The one with the figures looks slightly more like conceptual, you know.
Yeah.
So there's each one has kind of a nod to a particular kind of art.
Oh, definitely, definitely. But that was the thing. It was like, how can I unify these,
yes,
these elements so that they work,
yes,
as a set?
Yes.
But yeah, I have these things. I'm conscious of this stuff all the time. I think more than I draw, I think.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I,
yeah,
mean, it's, you know, it comes out in your art. That's the thing. You know, it's obviously, you're obviously thinking a lot about how to actually produce,
yeah,
this, how to get it from your brain onto the canvas or the page.
Exactly. I always find that that's far better in terms of the end result, is that you don't spend a lot of time noodling on,
no,
paper. You actually think a lot about what it is you're trying to achieve, and then you throw yourself at the book.
Yes.
That's really become my kind of modus operandi.